Welcome. You're tuning in to Candid Conversations with Women in Surgery from Connecticut Children's, a premier regional pediatric healthcare system. Topics can range from emerging research to career advice to the unique challenges female surgeons face when breaking into a male-dominated field.
Hello, I'm Lisa Morella, the Director of Organizational Effectiveness and Learning at Connecticut Children's. Welcome back for Season 3, Episode 1 of Women in Surgery Podcast. Tonight, we'll be talking about surgeons and pregnancy. Joining us today are some of our strong and mighty surgeon moms at Connecticut Children's. Early in career medical professionals, as well as medical students and those in the practice of surgery, may feel like the decision about when to start a family, especially those in surgical careers, might feel like a daunting challenge. We are going to hear from some experts tonight who have faced this same challenge. I'd like to welcome our panel and ask them to introduce themselves.
Hello, my name is Dr. Rana Sinha, and I'm a congenital heart surgeon. I have two children, a son who is 8 years old and a daughter who's about to turn 10.
I'm Dr. Amy Hughes. I'm a pediatric otolaryngologist. I have three daughters. They are almost 7, 4.5, and 18 months.
And I'm Dr. Leslie Nod. I'm a pediatric general and thoracic surgeon and have a son who's 1.5 years old.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ann Dudley. I'm a pediatric urologic surgeon, and I have two daughters aged 2 years and 4 years.
I am Dr. Allison Crapo. I'm a pediatric orthopedic surgeon, and I have one son who is almost 2.
Welcome to our surgeon moms. I'd like to start by asking, did you choose to start your family either in residency or fellowship?
I'll share my experience. I was pregnant with my daughter during research between third and fourth year of general surgery and doing a master's at the time. But I did end up coming back to fourth year of general surgery in my third trimester, which is when I had her. And I did have a complication. She was born full term, but only 2 kilos. Had had aspiration. I didn't realize I was in labor and I was still working up until her due date. And the following year, I got pregnant with our son and delivered him while I had been a chief resident at a busy level 1 trauma center and ended up going back to work 2 weeks after a repeat C-section.
Wow, Rana, that's quite a story and quite a journey.
So I can jump in. I became pregnant with my daughter during my clinical year of my fellowship and ultimately had her a few months before I finished fellowship, had a brief maternity leave, and then completed fellowship on time. And then I ended up having my second daughter during my second year of being on faculty here. Thankfully, I was pretty lucky. My second daughter did have a few scares during my pregnancy, but that required a ton of appointments, which was a challenge to fit into a new attending schedule, but ultimately born without major complications. So I count myself pretty lucky in that respect.
I had all three of my children as an attending. I was pregnant with my first while I was completing my fellowship. So for the last 6 months of my fellowship, I was pregnant, but she was born when I was attending, as were the other two.
And I was a new faculty at Connecticut Children's when I was pregnant and had my son in my first year as faculty.
It's interesting to hear the span of when in your career each of you made that decision to start a family. And I'm struck by Rana saying that, she was back on the floor 2 weeks after having her second C-section, and Anne saying, yep, and I completed my fellowship on time. It's just amazing the grit that all of you have. What I'd like to ask is, would you talk to us a little bit about how did you approach the decision about when to start your family? I'm sure there's lots of things you considered, lots of things you factored in. Would you be willing to share a little bit of that personal decision-making with us?
For me, I had my my son, I think, in my 8th year of practice. And part of that wasn't at all planning. It was just my life situation. I didn't meet my husband until I was in fellowship. And then, you know, it took a while. And then we got married and then started to try to have children and ran into infertility issues. So that delayed the process. So I didn't actually have my first child until I was 39 years old. So I know for some people, you know, there, some of it is choosing whether or not to do it in residency, but a lot of our lives just are happening outside of the timeline of our training and starting jobs. And so not everybody has those decisions to make.
Can you tell me a little bit about infertility and surgeons?
So there are some studies coming out and some recent indications that surgeons deal a lot more with pregnancy complications and infertility issues, including a higher rate of fetal loss. So, you know, for us, the decision was sort of made for us. I mean, we could have kept trying, but age was a huge factor. And I know that that factors into a lot of people's lives, that we, some people really do put everything on hold until we finish all of our training, which puts you into your 30s. And then suddenly people are dealing with, you know, infertility and issues like that. The IVF process is stressful. There's a lot of appointments. You don't really want to be, you know, I think for the most part, a lot of people don't talk about it. I was lucky to sort of find a network of other physicians at my hospital. Once I started mentioning things to people, all of a sudden I had like a crew of people, of physicians who had gone through it already, who became my support network, but nobody really willingly talks about it that much. Everything was under wraps. I didn't tell anybody unless they absolutely needed to know to arrange my schedule accordingly. And then going through that as a resident, I imagine would be extremely difficult because, you know, there are weeks when you need to be able to be available to have blood work drawn and ultrasounds. And so it's really difficult. And it's difficult even for residents going through the decision to freeze their eggs. You know, it comes down all the way to that where people opt to go through egg retrieval. And so, you know, I think we just need to talk about it and know that lots of people have gone through it and lean on each other.
So I think, you know, a lot of what Allison mentioned was similar to my thinking, even just having watched a lot of female colleagues in urology and other surgical fields, hearing their stories over the years. I think as one of the lone female residents in my program, it was not necessarily something that many people had done. I don't think anyone. And I actually met my husband later in the process as well. So I don't know how I would have felt if I had been younger and married or had a partner that wanted to embark on that journey. But I think that once we did decide we wanted to have children, I was not young. And that really factored into my decision-making. I had a lot of people comment when I was a fellow, why don't you just wait till you're done? It's only another year. But by that time, I actually already had friends who were struggling with infertility and thinking about the age and the fact that each year becomes a little bit more of a challenge. We decided to make the jump and figure it out and had family support, which thankfully really did help due to lack of childcare and a few other things after I delivered. So I think that that's something that thankfully now we're talking more about. And I do think that there's a lot more resources for residents going through now with support for at least discussing it and talking about freezing eggs. And none of these things are, you know, perfect, but I think at least talking about it and making it a little bit more okay, rather than saying you're just going to be a burden on your other residents, which is a mindset that I think we should really work to change.
You guys have mentioned freezing eggs twice now. I had a friend in training and she was a cardiothoracic surgeon and had no spouse or boyfriend. So she said, I'm going to freeze my eggs. It's going to be a long haul for training. And during training, she found someone special. She got married and has two beautiful children now, still in her training. So just as you decide, now I'm going to freeze my eggs, I mean, you have to put your family off until you're an attending.
You know, first and foremost, there's still a perception in 2020s that being a professional and then in our fields, which happens to be surgery, and being a mother are exclusive of one another. And that actually has a negative impact on a lot of our younger generation of students and trainees from entering a lot of our fields, that the concept is you can't be a good mom and a good surgeon. And I think we recently had an article about that or an op-ed some time ago, that you feel like you're not doing a good enough job at both. So there's still a lot of cultural stereotypes, and it's definitely a barrier. for women. And then also, as Liz mentioned, the support system. There's a lack, and I think with COVID recently, there's really been a lot more emphasis on what exists in our society to help support working professionals or dual working professionals in a household or a single working professional who's the caregiver for a family. And again, for me, as someone in my family, actually the common age to have children was much younger than when I had them. And so when I decided that I was going to, I was already worried about infertility as well, but it just so worked out that I was able to get pregnant successfully. But I can definitely understand the concerns and why it's a big problem.
So you've raised several interesting things. A lot of the silence around this can be very hard and isolating. What did you hear as you started sharing that you were pregnant? What were some of the things you heard, positive and completely inappropriate, as you started to share with colleagues, coworkers, the institution that you were pregnant?
When we were deciding to have kids, a lot of our time I had to do on logistics. My husband's a surgeon as well, and we were balancing two residencies and two fellowships that were not timed perfectly. And so when I was a fellow, we were actually living apart. And so he was in Connecticut and I was in Boston, and I needed to find a job for 1 year while delivering. So 1 year, including a maternity leave. And when I was looking for that job after just recently finding out that I was pregnant, I called a mentor that I knew in residency and, you know, kind of asked their opinion about how I could get hired somewhere for a year. And that, you know, by the way, I'm also pregnant. And the response was, oh, well, I don't know if I would have quite timed it that way. You know, that's going to make things a little bit more difficult for you, but, you know, okay, let me see what I can do. And so, you know, it was already a little bit of a stressful situation living apart from my husband at the time. And then just thinking about balancing our careers and where we were going to go, you know, it makes something that you're so excited about just a little bit more daunting.
So that judgment around when you said that you were pregnant, the judgment around, wow, I'm not sure I would have timed it that way.
So I think overall, I was pretty lucky, although I did have two people when I was a fellow say, was this on purpose? Which I thought was an interesting way to congratulate me on my pregnancy, which, you know, I think sometimes things are not planned. But I think either way, it's the person whose news it is to share those details or not. And I think that's where the discussion is, you know, everyone will react in their own way. The other thing I thought that was interesting in speaking about these things was that so much emphasis, at least in my experience, on so many children coming into the world with male residents. For example, I covered one colleague's paternity leave three different times when I was a resident. He welcomed three children, which was great. But then I think if the reverse had happened, it would have been faced with a different tone, which is definitely interesting to deconstruct.
I think that brings up the point that, again, if we're in a training environment, we're in a completely different silo than if you're in practice or even as a student, because, again, the surgical training paradigm expects a certain amount of surgical experience. In medical residencies, for example, or other residencies, you have quote-unquote research electives or some way to help either decrease the physical labors of your work or maternity leave and so on and so forth. And I found through my own experiences and now having researched this more in my field, just now the Congenital Heart Surgery Fellowship only this past year approved a formal four or six week maternity or parental leave policy. So again, applicable to both men and women besides a 4 week vacation. Otherwise you're just expected to have a baby, be on maternity leave, do anything else within a 4 week period, according to ACGME per year, which is not suitable for women. And thus we have a specific problem for women in training in any of our surgical fields.
So that's an institutional barrier or policy barrier.
That's a national problem. That's not just an institution, because when you're in practice, then you have labor laws, you have contract, potential interventions and negotiations. But under ACGME, you're outside a medical school format. So it's a different world altogether.
I had my own bias, I think, being pregnant and coming into a new region, a new state. I knew no one here and had no family. And I didn't want to tell everyone right away, by the way, I'm a few months pregnant. I wanted to kind of keep that my secret and let them get to know me as Leslie first, and then get to know Leslie, the pregnant surgeon. So I was a little concerned of just meeting new people and being stereotyped right at the beginning.
I love that, meeting Leslie the person, not Leslie the pregnant surgeon.
Well, to tag on to Leslie's story, we started at the same time, but I had been in practice. So I showed up to orientation pregnant. I actually had accepted this job, and anticipated moving up here. But again, we were on a timeline with IVF. And so as awful as it felt, I had to make the phone call to our surgeon in chief and say, you know, by the way, not only is it taking me longer to get out of my last job and get up there, but, I'm also pregnant. So I think I made a point of saying that I had good but inconvenient news, and making sure that I didn't apologize for being pregnant, because we should never apologize to anybody for being pregnant. And luckily, you know, Connecticut Children's has been amazing. And so it was a good experience.
I remember in orientation, I was listening to all of the questions you were asking, because I wasn't quite yet 3 months to tell people, but I was listening intently to your questions.
And this is where, sharing our stories when we are comfortable helps not just ourselves, but others too.
I was also pregnant when I joined here and no one knew. So must be something about joining Connecticut Children's, but I will say that everyone was extremely happy for me and it was a wonderful experience at this institution.
Well, how nice that a children's hospital lives up to our love of children, even with our surgeons and our physicians. I wanted to ask, Rana brought up the concept of, the physical demands of the job. And in some of the articles that all of us have read prior to this conversation, we talked about that sometimes women surgeons feel guilt about especially in training, if they are doing less because of limitations that the pregnancy may bring, that they're feeling guilty, that their other coworkers, colleagues are doing more. And, you know, I think we heard a story, you know, Anne shared a story of, you know, you covered for a male colleague, but I'm just wondering how you've each dealt with any of those feelings of guilt or any other worries or concerns you've had, if you've had to adjust your work schedule because of pregnancy.
One is your time off. And I've heard of a lot of people that for their maternity leave, their time off, they try to make up their call before and after. You can imagine that's stressful, whether it's before and you're in your third trimester or, you know, second trimester, or after when you're trying to learn how to raise a child. Sometimes people forget the pregnancy is not the hardest part necessarily. After the child comes, they also, we need support as well. So the American College of Surgeons now has it as a guideline that if someone is out for maternity leave, they should not be required to make up the call during that period. And that is an American College of Surgeons recommendation. That was applied to my maternity leave. I'm thankful, but I felt guilt. I absolutely felt guilt, to the point that I was asking some of the surgeons mom groups that I'm on, how can I support my colleagues that took my call? Does anyone else compensate them? Because we have disability leave, which pregnancy is not a disability, but sometimes it is, I guess. But our disability policy covers our maternity leave. So the hospital is not paying that salary. Can they give a bonus to the colleagues, my colleagues that are taking my call? Some institutions do that. And I think that would be help reduce some of the mom guilt if they were compensated for that extra call in some way.
I'm just curious, you know, how other people manage their practices prior to going out, because I found myself extremely busy right before going out on maternity leave, trying to schedule all the surgeries that I had to fit in. I didn't want to necessarily, you know, evaluate a patient and then have my, you know, one of my partners do the do the surgery. And so I think that prior to going out was probably some of the busiest times in my, you know, in my practice, just with call and with, you know, fitting everybody in.
I would agree with that. I think I had two different experiences, one in training and one as a faculty. And for my second daughter, I thought that some of the most challenging times was right up until her birth. You know, we are a very small department and I was seeing, you know, new patients, patients that just needed to get in, trying to close up as many, you know, ends as I could, sign people out, get things done. You know, I operated on a kid with a very serious condition when I was 39 weeks. And I remember telling his mother, like, this is planned on Monday. I may go into labor over the weekend. You might have somebody else. And I was there, but it was not ideal. But in a small department, I think, you know, you're trying to pull your weight till the end. And then there was also the dynamic of, you know, I was supposed to go out and stop having new patients at a certain amount of time to finish everything up. But then you're kind of sitting there twiddling your thumbs waiting to have this baby and feeling a little bit useless. So I think that was definitely a challenge. I'm not sure exactly if there's a better way of doing it because you just can't plan when the baby arrives. And I was lucky in that I had enough time to, you know, stay up till midnight the night before my induction, closing all my charts and signing everything out. And then when I arrived at the hospital the next day, they were very full and they sent me home, which made me cry. hours later, they got me back and had that baby. So, you know, I think that's definitely a challenge.
Wow. What a story.
I had a different experience just because I was starting up a new practice and working literally for 2 months and then going out on maternity leave. So I think that part was a little easier because, you know, I wasn't as busy, but I actually had to really start limiting myself from a surgical standpoint towards the end. I dealt with a ton of pain in my pregnancy and a really bad symphysis pubis dysfunction, which is horrible. And I like found myself having to limit myself to no more than two cases, because our cases are usually pretty physical and like lifting up heavy legs. And I really struggled towards the end with just getting through a day from a pain standpoint. So I don't know if other people had that experience, but that that part was hard.
I actually forgot about my SI joint pain and my carpal tunnel until you mentioned that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think because my pregnancies were in training, I happened to, for both kids, I think I was on thoracic surgery at the end, and those are pretty long cases. I'm under 5 feet tall and the attendings I worked with were 6 feet tall. And so for all the cases, I was standing on two, if not three steps. And definitely the nurses had to hold me and from the back to make sure I had balance. And with my second one, doing trauma call in-house in my third trimester was tough. But I don't know what I would do differently, because when I requested my team or my cohort, my classmates to try to switch rotations, there was a lot of resistance, you know, including from another female. But I do believe in karma, because 5 years later when I met her and she said, oh, you know what? I remember when I didn't switch rotations with you. I really think I should have, because now I've had a baby and man, is it hard to be pregnant and to be operating.
Wow. You know, I just want to pause because Rana, that's a powerful story about that you were standing on three steps in order to perform the surgery. And you had a person behind you that was physically touching you to make sure that you were balanced. And let's just pause. What was that like?
It's just the feeling that you can't stop. And I always liken surgery to the military for that regard, that if you show any weakness, you will easily be taken out of the field. And because, again, maybe a lot of our fields come from our adult surgical training for our specialty, and then our final years is in pediatric, where maybe the environment is a little bit more conducive, but the adult world is still very, very hierarchical, very male-dominated, you know, and there's so many other components, but it's not the norm. Although in my training program, I had two chief residents that were women and had multiple pregnancies. So,
what have others experienced? Anne, what about you?
I mean, I think that brings up a point that I'd forgotten, I had been told, but right after I announced my first pregnancy, I was told, well, you may feel the need, and you probably should, overcompensate for the fact that you're pregnant this year. And it was interesting because obviously that's sort of a natural tendency for me to try to make up for anything that might be, because they said of perceived weakness for the fact that you're pregnant. But to have somebody actually say that out loud to you, provoked is a pretty powerful thing. And I remember sort of just trying to say, you know, this is not going to affect anything. You know, we had a system where if I didn't feel well, they would have a stool behind me and I would operate sitting down. And looking back, that was just insane. You know, there should have been a flexibility to say, did you get enough rest? Because our fellowship year, you took call all the time, basically. And it wasn't super busy all the time, but there were nights certainly where you should have taken better care of yourself.
Thanks, Anne. One of the things our listeners couldn't see was how high Leslie's eyebrows got raised when when Anne talked about telling her she needed to overcompensate. So, Leslie, I'd love to know what those shooting eyebrows were about.
I can't believe someone had the audacity to say that. And unfortunately, I'm also not completely surprised in surgery. The next thought I had was, if someone's saying that, how many people are thinking it? And then we get back to the problem that we're here trying to solve.
So I don't know if we'll solve it, but let's put your brilliant minds together to at least do some thinking about it. There are barriers facing both about pregnancy and motherhood. And I think, Rana, you talked about, can you be a good surgeon and a good mom? I'd love for you to share some of your lessons learned or some of your insights. Or if you had a magic wand and were going to do it again, what would you do differently or tell others to think about as they embark upon this path?
I think that's a great question. Thank you for asking that, Lisa. I'm not sure if I would have done so much differently, because I always knew surgery is a long road and life is multidimensional and there's only so much you can plan. And every time I talked about my pregnancies, it was usually amongst colleagues met with a negative comment, negative remarks. And my spouse is also a physician, and it's been a very challenging to have 2 children and both of our careers. And I've been a single parent for majority of my children's lives. So in that regards, I guess I could have planned to have them after we both were finished with training, but others can attest to this. Then sometimes other unplanned things can come up. So there really is no answer. And I think a lot of the lessons are, you just have to take the situation you have and be content and not have to defend yourself and not have to prove yourself. And by the fact that now we are the women in this field and we can set examples that if someone is interested in our field, gender and motherhood should not be necessarily a barrier.
Words of wisdom. Thank you.
I think it's true. There's never a good time. When I was going through training, you know, the women surgeons that I knew would say, there's never a good time. Sometimes it'll just happen, whether you plan it or not. So it may be your definition of what is the good time.
I was just going to add one step further to that, is that, you know, we talk about sort of letting things happen, but sometimes maybe they don't happen. So I have several sort of female surgeon friends who, you know, didn't find a partner or didn't get there, but wanted kids and did it on their own. So I think at some point you have to make the life that you want and not let what's happening around you dictate it. So if we gave up things in our lives to have our careers, but we don't have to give up everything, there's options, and some people just make their own path. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think, you know, one of the most important things that I learned early on was that, you know, you need to focus on the things that are going to make you happy and realize that work is only one dimension of that. I think in surgery, the culture that is slowly changing is that this is your whole life. And I think in the past, some generations of surgeons, really, it was their whole life. But I think that now in our current society, we're much more, you know, tuned into the fact that you need to gain fulfillment from various spheres. And I think that at the end of the day, if it feels important to you to have a family, there are ways of balancing things. And I was lucky to have a mentor in medical school who was a vascular surgeon. And he outright, when I was a medical student, said, you can't do everything, but you can certainly make your priorities and make your choices. And he had decided, you know, to step down from being the chair and was, you know, doing a wound clinic so that he could spend more time with his children and coach them. And I thought that was a really great lesson because he was still one of the educational role models. And he was a very well-respected vascular surgeon, but he made it a point to say, even he couldn't do that. So I think that's where we have to temper our expectations a little bit, but also realize that there's trade-offs that you have to just be willing to make.
I don't think I would have done anything differently either. And I think, you know, kind of echoing what's already been said, there's never going to be a great time. But, you know, I will say that for every person out there who may not support your pregnancy, I have met so many mentors and had so many female colleagues that have gone through this with me. You know, one of my co-fellows was pregnant at the same time. And, you know, a lot of my mentors during fellowship, as well as an attending, are women, strong women who have been great mothers and great surgeons who, you know, have really taught me a lot along the way. And so for every naysayer, there's certainly, at least in the field of otolaryngology, a colleague out there who is so happy for you and for what you're going through.
And I'd say, I think the last thing that we all could certainly echo is just how much it brings to being a pediatric specialist. And I think mm-hmm. that's where certainly we have many colleagues who are a pediatric specialist who are not parents, do not have any children. However, I do think there's an experience learned of having your own children that really adds to the care that you provide and really validates some of the experiences parents are going through, which I think is certainly a great addition to serving them.
I think as a final point, I'm hopeful that as we move forward, you know, we can normalize some of this and maybe not always wear our crazy stories about what we did while we were pregnant as badges of honor. I mean, it's amazing what we do and what we push through, but I think also it needs to be okay to not do that, or if, you know, to try to avoid complications in pregnancies and try to avoid things. So I think hopefully, you know, as we increase our numbers of women in surgery, then undoubtedly these conversations will come to the forefront. And then, you know, maybe we don't all have to be superheroes. I mean, I think we still have to try, but, you know, I think it would be good if we could give ourselves some grace too.
I love the fact that Leslie says there's no perfect time. It's not that there's a perfect time when to start thinking about having a family. I love that no apologizing, no need to defend yourself, no need to overcompensate. I love the focus on what makes you happy. And I also heard you say that to be the successful have the successful surgical careers you each have, you've had to give up a lot in your life to get on this very specific path. But the one thing you don't have to give up is the choice of being a good surgeon and a mom, a good mom. And I just wanted to reiterate that because I thought that was so well said by each of you in so many different ways. So I want to thank all of you for sharing this very personal journey, this very powerful journey. Our women in surgery are amazing, and we always learn something from how you operate. Thank you.
That's our show. Thank you for listening. Please visit ConnecticutChildrens.org. And don't forget to rate, review, or subscribe to the Women in Surgery podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play.